Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Well, the number of minority-owned businesses has grown to about a third of all businesses in the United States. But startups for blacks and Latinos also have higher failure rates. And economists say one big reason is they have less access to federally backed loans from big banks. Farida Javala-Romero from Here and Now contributor KQED reports on some of the challenges facing minority business owners in California.
And rolling in one, two.
Hello and welcome to All About Community. My name is Robert.
Leonard Stevens has run a television production business in Oakland for 13 years. His shows air on two Bay Area cable channels, and he sees potential for his network, RTV, to go national, even global. Its online streaming numbers show it, he says.
People are watching us all over the world. I was looking at the analytics yesterday.
To expand, Stevens is applying for a small business administration loan, $500,000. A bank has to provide the loan, but the federal SBA guarantees up to 85% of the amount in case the borrower can't pay back. That's why Stevens believes the bank might be more willing to take a chance on his business.
So the bank has a very low risk in terms of them losing any money.
If he succeeds, he'll be a rarity. The SBA guaranteed more than $5 billion last year in California, but African Americans were just 2% of those borrowers. Latinos were 13%, even though they own close to a quarter of all the businesses in the state. The tiny percentage of minority loans is not a good sign for the U.S. economy, says Alicia Robb, an economist with the University of Colorado.
Minority businesses are a growing share of our business community and, you know, as our population. And so we need to ensure, because they're lower wealth levels, they're more reliant on credit. We need to ensure that credit markets are working for them.
Rob has found that blacks and Latinos apply less than white Americans for bank loans for fear of rejection. And then there's this fact from multiple studies. When those minority business owners do apply, they get rejected more than equally creditworthy white-owned firms.
That's why we need the government to really focus on these huge gaps that we see in the market.
Mark Quinn directs the SBA for Northern California. He says the Great Recession left African Americans and Latinos farther behind. Those communities lost much of their wealth. People who lost their homes also lost collateral to apply for business loans.
Certainly before the Great Recession, SBA had a higher share of our lending to African American and Latino businesses. What we saw then after the Great Recession was a couple of really negative factors. Low-income communities had their credit scores affected. Lenders became more conservative. Regulators told lenders that they wanted to see more cautious lending.
Quinn says the SBA started a pilot program in 2011 to reach underserved communities. It's called Community Advantage, offering loans up to $250,000. Those SBA-backed dollars don't go through big banks.
You can't really get the large for-profit lenders to really see that it's profitable to do lots of small loans. That's why we really look to the nonprofit world to be our real avenue to get into some of the communities we can't get to from some of the national banks.
The program is still just a pilot. Quinn says it's been hard to ramp up Community Advantage and other microlending SBA programs because nonprofit lenders have less capacity than banks, so there's fewer loans going out. But for the small business owners who are successful in getting those dollars, it can make a huge difference. Woohoo! That's how Dominica Rice opened her restaurant Cosecha in Oakland.
We've been here, this July will be 6 years.
Rice saw others in her family open businesses that didn't work out, so she was very cautious.
So I took around almost 5 years of interviewing people who I've known and worked with who own restaurants, and I asked them every question.
She was mentored and saved money, and then found a local nonprofit lender that helped her figure out how to make her menu cost-effective and guided her through the loan application process.
And the applications are daunting. And tell them, like, I'm a dyslexic Chicana from L.A. I was very forthcoming. I'm like, this is not my thing. I'm not the person who's on the computer doing a ton of research. I am the person who climbs a mountain in Oaxaca to meet a señora who makes mole. That's who I am.
And that mole sauce is popular. There's a long line of customers here daily. Rice has already repaid her $35,000 loan. Our other borrower, Leonard Stevens, he decided to go a different route. He hired brokers to help him prepare his SBA loan application.
The brokers are there to utilize some of the banks or financial institutions that they've worked with before that they have a good relationship with.
The brokers advised Stevens to hire an accountant to put his media company's balance sheets in order and do cash flow projections for the bank.
And you should come back and talk to me in a few weeks, and then I'll have a bigger perspective and hopefully a bigger smile on my face by then. I've invested a lot of money in these brokers.
Stevens has paid about $30,000 total to the brokers and the accountant just to apply. He just hopes it's worth it. For Here and Now, I'm Farida Javala Romero in Oakland.
Micah, there are currently 7 plaintiffs in this class action lawsuit, but attorneys say they've already gotten calls from more than 30 other water department employees saying they, too, were subjected to name-calling, racist behavior, and overall working in what they say was a hostile environment for decades.
They sexually harass our women. They intimidate and harass our men. They have intentionally and systematically stripped us of our seniority. We have both glass ceilings and glass walls based solely on the color of our skin.
Derek Edmond has been an engineer with the city's water department for more than 30 years. He joined 6 other plaintiffs in this suit. They say they work in a poisonous work environment every single day.
This hostile work environment affects our working environment, promotions, job assignments, disciplinary actions, everyday treatment, and everyday treatment. The water department makes our reality very clear. Either drown in a poisonous culture or leave to make room for one of their own.
In the complaint, the workers say they were called the N-word, women referred to in derogatory terms, and both passed over or denied promotions in favor of white employees or workers from other plants. And they said if they complained about being unhappy, they weren't given the opportunity to transfer to a different plant. Archie High retired 3 years ago after spending more than 40 years as a laborer for the water department. He, too, says he was ignored and denied the opportunity to move up the corporate ladder when he voiced concern about working conditions.
Now that I can see that somebody cares somewhere, you know what I'm saying? So it's just that the 40 years I was here, I went through a turmoil.
Attorneys say while their clients were responsible for bringing fresh water to millions of Chicago residents, they often felt faceless and voiceless at work until now.
That the culture of the water department is indeed hostile and abusive. That's already been admitted. And this is the next step in that admission process. This is the next step in the reconciliation of how black people have been treated every day.
Now, the plaintiffs say they want more oversight from the city, the ability to be promoted equally like others based on their seniority and equal pay. Attorneys aren't putting a price tag on how much they want in compensation. From the city, they say they'll wait until they have a final number of how many workers joining the class action suit before they do that. Now, the city hasn't yet responded to the lawsuit, but Mayor Emanuel and the city council are praising the new water commissioner, Randy Connor, an African-American man from the South Side who was promoted and confirmed by aldermen just on Wednesday. Mark and Micah.
context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully, to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. I got dislodged from my water in dealing with some of the issues as we began. I figured out, I'd said, I think a few days ago, that we were having some tech issues. I was trying to figure out what the problem was. It seemed exclusive to the live stream. I think I have figured it out. We will have to see, but it required me to do some moving. I had to switch floors from the house. That was what caused the delay in getting rolling. But my apologies. Hopefully we will not have the issue moving forward. This is Workplace Racism, our weekly Thursday forum, workplace racism issues. Certainly if we have black entrepreneurs, dial in. If you have commentary you would like to share, feel free. Certainly for other folks, if you're employed, if you work for white folks directly, indirectly, if you generally have black or non-white managers, coworkers, what have you, dial in. If you are having problems yourself, if you've made observations of different things that are going on in the workplace, if you have reviewed your work history, that's something I try to remind folks of on a regular basis. Reflecting back for folks who are thinking about studying racism, white supremacy now, you can reflect back to what you thought, how you felt when you were a bit more confused and see if there is a difference in terms of any problems that you experienced, situations that came up, how you dealt with things. Then knowing what you were having the understanding of racism, white supremacy you had at that time, as opposed to what you would do, what you would say now or not do, not say, with the understanding you have now. I think that can be very important as well. Again, we have younger folks, folks who do not have, you know, extensive work history. So I think it's always, they always appreciate, I think, being able to hear about different work scenarios so they can kind of get a heads up, myself included, on the type of things that you might have to prepare for. In a given work situation, just knowing, you know, this is how I would respond, this is what I would do, this is what I would say. The number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. That number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Again, my email address, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, for the workplace racism broadcast specifically, for that program. If you want to email in, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have commentary, questions, what have you, that you would like to share, feel free, untiljustice@gmail.com. We can read it anonymously on the broadcast and share your thoughts, observations, what have you, untiljustice@gmail.com. Quick comments I had. I thought those were two very important segments that we kind of began this week's broadcast with. The first one where they were talking about the lack of finances being available to the term they used, minority business owners, talking about non-white people in the States. I always think that that sort of information is important because, you know, I've heard many times on this broadcast and just in general, I hear people, you know, say, hey, all we need to do, black people, is start our own businesses, that will end the problem with racism, white supremacy, or at least that will end our difficulties with regards to experiencing racism on the job and white people not wanting to give us jobs or then just brutalizing us, you know, once they allow us to get some form of employment. And I say I'm never speaking in opposition to being self-employed, working for yourself. Nothing incorrect about that at all. But I just think it's inaccurate if people are talking as though your problems with white supremacy, racism will be over once you go into business for yourself. That is not the truth. No way, no how. Do not believe it for a second. And that's why I try and include information and encourage participation from Black entrepreneurs and encourage or share that sort of information as well, because that's consistent with what I've seen the entire time that I've been studying racism, white supremacy. Is consistent with what I've heard from other folks. I also thought it was interesting that they included in that a lot of times Black people will not apply, non-white people in general will not apply, because they think that they're going to be rejected. So they don't even, you know, make an effort to go out and try to get a loan or what have you to start up a business. And then they added that, yes, Black people, non-white people, are disproportionately rejected for loans, even if they have the same amount of income and wealth, debt, whatever, when they look at the ratios and all that, even when their financial portfolio is comparable to that of a white person who would get a loan, they're still more likely to be rejected. I thought that was important as well, because that's why you have a lot of non-white people who just say, hey, I already know that they're not going to give me the money, which in many instances is true, unfortunately. 2%, that number stood out. It was glaring for me because also workplace racism related, that is the number of Black male teachers that we have in the U.S. Might even be a little lower than that. Just wrote about that this week. Man, workplace racism. One other thing I will share, and then I have people did write in for workplace racism. I'm going to read one and then we'll get to the phone lines. But one thing that I did, I've been meaning to share this for some time, my own bit of workplace racism. So I've been writing for Atlanta Black Star for some time. I wrote for them some years before as well. I'm compensated for writing for them. So they mail me a check, right, for writing for them. Just, I think, in April. So, it, you know, 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. I don't get my check. I contact the payroll department. Check never arrived. And they say, oh, okay, no problem. They're super business-like about it at Atlanta Black Star. You know, our apologies. We did mail it out on such and such a date. But if you didn't get it, no problem. We'll cancel the check we sent out. Send you a new one. No problem. They verify the address. Tell them, you know, I will I will notify you once it arrives. Mail out a new check. Kid you not. The very same weekend that the new check arrives, the old check also arrives. In fact, they're in the mailbox at the same time. I look at the old check. I've never seen this before in my life, ever, ever. And if it has happened to anyone who is on the line, I would be curious to know, even though this might not necessarily be related to workplace racism directly, but I mean, it was that strange. The original check that was first mailed out had stamped on it in blue ink, missent to Taipei. I'm stunned. What are you talking about? Like, I'm scratching my head. Like, is there someplace in the U.S. that, you know, is named Taipei where my mail could have gone? Like, are you serious? I'm stunned. I wanted to photograph it and like put it on social media or something, and just because I've never had that happen before. I've had, you know, mail that was delayed and that sort of thing, mail that I thought I didn't get or what have you. But to actually have mail that was missent out of the country, and a payroll check, no less, that is missent out of the country. Wow. Now, this is, you know, hey, this is not that big a deal. Gus, you're just goofy because, you know, you don't get enough mail. You don't pay attention to enough things. I get my mail missent to, you know, Alaska, Canada, Mexico, Cancun. It happens to me all the time. No big deal. Fine. That'll just let me know. Oh, okay, that was just, you know, I've been a little bit, you know, amiss in my understanding of how mailing works. And, you know, if something is missent, where it could be missent to. Moving forward, one of the folks who wrote in for workplace racism, and again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Last week for workplace racism, we opened with a segment from Kathy Harris, her visit to the cows. This was back in, I think, 2013. We talked about her experience. She was a TSA worker And we talk about her experience working like baggage claim, and you have to, or not baggage claim, I'm sorry, when you have to do the pat downs and such, right? You have to search people and do all that to make sure they're not, you know, terrorist threat and that sort of thing. And she talked about the racism that she experienced both as an employee and what she saw happening to other black employees, and she talked about the abuse that she saw happening to black passengers. And specifically, she talked about black female passengers going to the Caribbean. And she said that they would be aggressively targeted for all types of searches, anal cavity searches, and rifling all through their packages and what have you. Said, oh, man, you got to be, you know, smuggling narcotics or something, you know, that they didn't do this to anybody else. There'd be tons of white people who were bringing in all kinds of drugs and what have you, contraband, and they would not be subjected to these types of intrusive searches at all. So I played a little bit of that segment last week for Workplace Racism. A listener wrote in. He says, I was a baggage handler at an airport in New York City during the 1990s when the Air Jamaica flight came in. I would see female customs officers putting on plastic gloves like they were surgeons. I didn't know why, so I asked an old timer why they were doing this. He told me, because they are going to dig in those women's private parts. This was done for no other flight. Alitalia and Air France went through customs quickly, even though everybody knew all the heroin was coming in on those two flights, but Air Jamaica would be there for hours. The passengers would be subjected to customs dogs sniffing them and their children, and no other flight got that type of attention. Passengers on that flight complained to me about it and told me that dogs were brought on the plane in Jamaica and New York. Another person corroborating, again, Kathy Harris. You can go back in the archives to hear her full broadcast. You can check out her books as well. She has written extensively about some of the things that she saw, things that happened to her, things she saw happening, racism, white supremacy she saw happening to passengers as well. You can check out her books as well. But that was another person writing in about their workplace observations also. We'll get to the phone lines. We have Stacy with us in the UK. I'm going to double check to make sure the stream is working correctly. And if you are having any difficulties via the live stream, you can always call the live line, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. You can press *6 if you would like to participate, or you can just listen there if you are having any trouble listening on the live stream, Black Talk Radio Network, or tune in. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary that you wanted to share, line should be open. Feel free to chime in.
May I be heard?
Can I be heard?
I heard both of you. We'll
yeah, ladies first. Ladies first.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Hello to you, Gus, the host, and to all the callers and listeners of the line, and thanks to the gentleman that yielded the line to me. Just wanted to comment. You talked about this paycheck of yours that was sent halfway around the world. And I just want to tell you, so I would never forget this. And this was a job I was much younger. I ended up getting fired from this job. But I remember we used to get paid. I was a security guard at a hospital in Houston, Texas. And so we used to get paid. And, you know, you had to go in office and, you know, sign the thing. And so when the secretary would hand me the check, I would always make a little joke and say, you sure you don't have another check in there for me? And we would laugh, you know, about it. So one time I went in, and I was having some trouble on the job, having some trouble with my supervisors and stuff. And I remember I asked her, she gave me my paycheck, and I asked her, I said, you sure you don't have another check for me? And she says, I do. Had another check for me. So I took the check, and, you know, I walked away, and I'm just like, something ain't right about this, because I should not be getting two checks. There was no vacation, you know, nothing I had applied for. And I took that check, so I took the check down, and I took it back to HR. And I was telling the lady, this is why. So she took the check. She said, okay, well, you know, I'll investigate it. So that was like in the early 80s, and yet I guess you could say I'm still waiting for an explanation as to why it happened. So you're not able to get an explanation. But my whole point was I was having some trouble on the job at that time. I was having some trouble with my supervisors and stuff like that. And I was just pointing out how, and particularly as black people, we have to be careful because these are the type of games that we play, that they play with us. You know, an extra check that comes out of nowhere. And unfortunately, there are times that black people, we get caught right in that trap because we take that check, we cash that check, and the next thing you know, your company's looking at you, and now they're going to fire you because why? It becomes a form of theft. So, you know, I just wanted to share that, and, you know, just, you know, even though, I don't know if you can say it's workplace racism, I am a black, you know, female, and, you know, I guess it could happen with anybody, but I will say I was having some problems, you know, on my job. I was young, out of college, having trouble. I had a white female boss, and, you know, nowadays I understand, you know, working with these female she-devils. But, you know, back then, you know, just clueless. You know, I just clueless, didn't have a clue as to, you know, what was going on with this woman. You know, like when the very second, I think she was married to a black guy. Or either she was married to a black guy or there was somebody in her family who was married to a black guy because she had a niece that worked in security with us, and she was biracial. And so I just wanted to share that because I remember that, and I remember it just like it happened, you know, yesterday. And when you were saying, you know, about a check that you got back that was sent, you know, halfway around the world, and I just know that sometimes these are some of the games that are played with us. So like you say, for you, a lost check in the mail, and you know how we plan out our budgets with our money, you know, that type of stuff can just throw us way off of schedule for rent to be paid, utilities to be paid, and everything like that. And this is, you know, it's just part of their arsenal that they have. But I'll mute myself and just want to thank you for taking my call, but I just felt that I wanted to share that and just give that warning to people because that, I've heard of cases of people, you know, getting a second check and they take that check and they cash it and spend it, and then they're complaining when they get fired. It's just like, but you know that wasn't your check, and we fall right into those traps. Anyway, I'll mute myself. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing, caller in Ohio. Yeah, very, very important. No free dollars for black people generally under the system of white supremacy. There should be a lot of suspicion. That's when I'm even reminded of Mr. Fuller, where you get maybe you take a group picture with the CEO of the company and the head of the payroll department and the head of HR department, and they all come and take a photograph with you together saying, yes, you were supposed to get two checks this week, and we all say that that's okay. You can go cash it right now, and we're all going to take our photograph and get this notarized immediately. That's when you go ahead and take that check and cash it. That's, I think, what Mr. Fuller would say. Right. I'm not sure, was that retired firefighter who spoke up simultaneously?
Yes, sir.
Okay, right on.
Can I be, I guess I could be heard. I'm on Bluetooth, just wanted to make sure. I was doing some brainstorming. You know, I drive around a lot, going back and forth with different things, and just gave it a thought on back 40 years ago. Well, we know we're in kind of like in the middle of getting too close to the middle of the summer, and we all know. Well, I would figure most of us would know that black teenagers are probably the lowest on employment. And during the summer months, that becomes even more essential because now a lot of young people are not on their mainstream job, which is going to school. For the most part, during the summer months. I can recall back 40-some-odd years ago when I was a teenager, there was much more, it seems to have been much more employment with teenagers. I'm specifically talking about black teenagers than it is today, as far as for what I can see. And one of the jobs that was available was something that was called Team Clean. I don't know on how far that traveled within the Northwestern Hemisphere, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was very popular. Whereas you would report to a area, and you'll be given a garbage bag and one of those poke sticks, and you will walk through the community, literally where you live at, and cleaning up, and you will get paid for it. You will get compensated for it. Now, in my mind, back during that time, that was very constructive, because it would basically help out the parents as far as buying school clothes for that year, or at least some of them, because you would be able to purchase your own clothes during that time. And the other things that go along with a person working and earning some compensation for it that goes along with it is very constructive. And as I was driving over the past week, I got a thought, because I think I'm not the only person that sees it. I think what replaced it is actually what takes place is they have people in greater confinement to do that job nowadays. I see it all the time down here in South Florida, people in greater confinement who are picking up trash. Now, there seems to be a lot of times when I observe that with the van or pickup truck, that's the quote unquote correctional officer, and he is supervising the inmates there in jumpsuits and whatnot. What I see a lot of is people who appear to be inmates who appear to be white that does that job. And the way I look at it from that standpoint is that instead of the blacks getting picked to be able to get, I think it's more or less would be somewhat of a better situation to be able to get out of the sales or whatever and work and that sort of thing. And I see some whites who are actually in prison who are doing the work. But nevertheless, even with the black inmates who are out there, we also know, and it's in the Constitution itself, that a felon, a convicted felon, is a slave in itself. So I think that's where that job went. And just making a correlation or job similar to that, I think it went to that particular direction. On the employment that I have of a football coach, the white male. Who is actually had the position of assistant athletic director at the time. I think I reported maybe about almost a year ago now that I basically, by my questioning him in a meeting where he kept rudely questioning the head football coach, who is like a legendary high school football coach in the state of Florida, about what he does. And I basically informed him on, hey, I mean, you make a choice. If you don't like what he does, you don't have to coach. And he stormed out of the room. Well, he eventually left to go to another high school, which is glad for me to hear. The athletic director, who was a buddy of his, also went with him to the same school. So that was a move by these two white gentlemen, I guess, who couldn't take the atmosphere anymore in the present place where they were at the high school that I work at. Those are all the things that I experienced and or thought of this week. And thank everybody for listening.
for sure, a retired firefighter. I remember you speaking about the white coach and, you know, the black self-respect and how you were able to stand up to him, and that caused him to move along and, you know, find better pasture. So you don't have to be bothered with him anymore. Granted, he has moved on. And that the first part of which you were talking about in terms of the summer jobs, I just saw there was just a report where they were talking about in general that has been the trend where you just have – you just don't have as many younger people out working. And they said some of that was back in 2008 when they had the big – what they call recession, that job sector was hit really hard and that it didn't really recover. And the same thing that you said, particularly for black teens, non-white teens in general, but especially black teens, you do not have nearly the level of employment for that group that you had, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. And for sure, supplement income and school supplies, absolutely, absolutely. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, Stacey in the UK, are you with us as well? Oh, maybe she's not with us. I'll check in. I thought she was with us. I'll check in with her as we proceed. Other folks who dialed in who have a hand up, if you have commentary, you should be with us as well.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everybody. 2812 from Virginia. Couple of observations, very, very much work-related. I was in Atlantic City over the weekend. Fiance and I took a trip out there to go to a concert, and we always try to do our best to find black establishments, specifically black restaurants, to try to go eat and support. And we found a restaurant, it's called Sam's. It's in Pleasantville, I believe. It's really nice, good service, really great food. And we always try to figure out a way to talk about racism, white supremacy, or just to talk about things that can, you know, help black people. And so there was a gentleman there that was working there, and he was taking our order. And if anybody has been to Atlantic City, they know that if they've been there recently, a lot of the casinos have closed and stuff like that. So I've never been there, actually. That was my first time going in maybe 20 years since I was a teenager. And so I just asked the guy, I was like, hey, by the way, like, what's the economy out here like? You know, what's the job situation out here like for black people? And he was like, well, you know, they've closed like 5 casinos in the last 4 years. And he said the unemployment rate is like through the roof. He said 30,000 majority black people are not working, and that area of the world kind of looks like an episode of The First 48, and it does not get reported like that. And I said, are you saying 30,000 like black? He said the majority of people in that area, 30,000 people unemployed since these casinos have closed down. And, you know, you just think about the system of racism, white supremacy, and I know some people might not directly attribute that to workplace racism, but I'm just like, you know, all these people not working, drugs, white supremacists are just treating this area like nothing can be done, and this crime is rampant, and then in a couple of years they'll just go in, clean everything up, and kick the Negroes out. So we were both just sitting there, wow, you know, we hear about statistics like that, but to actually hear somebody talk about specifically a local area to where you have so many black people that are affected in the area of employment, that was really, really sad, and hopefully those people can gain some sort of employment, and some people have some constructive ideas about things to do. Had opportunity, taught a class last week, have been helping a lot of non-white people, in reference to, I'm in the mortgage business, have had a lot of clients. One quick story about a black female that was able to, she was a manager at a fast food job, and now she was able to apply for another job, and she gave herself almost double of her salary in about a week. And she told me that story, and I was just very, very happy. And that's just encouragement for anybody out there that's possibly looking for opportunities in this system. They are out there. You just have to kind of take a little bit of a jump and a leap.
Uh,
caller in Virginia. Are you still with us, sir? Caller in Virginia. Are you still with us, sir?
Hello?
Oh.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that. I think your mute button might have been me. I don't know if my finger slipped or what have you, but yes.
Yeah, it was the Siri girl. The Siri girl hit the mute, not me. So I thought you was turning the lights on like at a party, man. I was like, okay, I need to be quiet. But no, I was done, Gus. Just trying to, you know, share some constructive information. I'm done. I'm good.
I know. Right when he was saying take a leap on faith, that was whew. Still take the leap. I thought that was great, though. Very encouraging to hear. I'm happy for her, the black female who doubled her salary in a week or what have you. And yes, things can be very dire under the system. I mean, that's what they intend, for it to be, you know, extremely horrendous for non-white people worldwide, particularly in employment, because that, you know, has an impact on so many other things that we try to get done worldwide. Other folks who dialed in, who have a hand up, other folks who had commentary? You know, if we had people who had a hand up and needed some time or were still thinking, let me double check in as well. Stacy, are you with us, or did we miss out on Stacy? Might have missed out. I will message her to make sure that she is hearing us, that we're getting through. Was didn't want to miss her commentary. I also wanted to make sure the audio segment that we started at the beginning of the program with, not the one that was about finances and what they call minority business owners being denied loans and what have you, but the second clip that talked about the water department in Chicago, where they filed a class action lawsuit because they're saying that they were being terrorized on the job. The black employees were being terrorized. They said that they were subject to a poisonous work environment where black workers were spit on, ignored. They said that they were making sexually vile comments towards the black female employees, that they were being denied seniority. I mean, they had a long list of very specific indictments about what was happening to them on the job. I thought this was extremely important. Number one, when I say consistently, you know, it shouldn't be that we have spectators for workplace racism, because this sort of thing is very, very common. I don't think, you know, the situation that they were talking about is something unusual or strange at all, because, and it was so many things, and it was so detailed and specific about the type of things that they were experiencing. And this was a class action suit. This wasn't an individual. This was a group of people saying, yes, this has been happening, and this has been happening for a while, and nothing being done about it. And at the water department, no less, after the whole thing in Flint, you know, to have this sort of thing going down at the water department, wow. But I thought that was really important, and just the importance of documentation. I don't know if they have recordings of any of these type of statements being said, or, you know, they documented. I mean, that would be tremendous if you got seven different people who all documented on, you know, July 1st. Mr. Tom Robinson came in and, you know, said such and such a joke about nigger this or nigger that or whatever, you know, all the different things that they item. It would be great if you had seven different pieces of documentation, date, time. This is what he said, and you got almost verbatim. Everybody's got pretty close to the same type of thing written down as to what they heard. I mean, that would be awesome from, you know, if you're the attorney that's prosecuting this case. That's, you know, makes your case great. Just to really emphasize, again, the importance of documentation, and it sounds like they might have been in a situation where they were able to coordinate their efforts. That is not something that you want to anticipate or expect, but man, if you can do that sort of thing, if you have a good rapport with other folks there, just if you can just encourage documenting when these sort of things happen. It doesn't mean that you have to go get an attorney or anything. Just keep documentation of things that happen. If they hear something or they witness something, just document, just write it down. That can be a huge asset, even moving forward. And again, since that sexual thing came up, that's why I also think it's really important to make sure that you have a code about that, because they said that the black female workers were being subjected to sexual comments and what have you. What do you say? What do you do? I think Emmy has been great. If it's some form of touching, in terms of, hey, you already practice your move, your physical move away from that person. And, you know, do not touch me. Make sure you say it firm or whatever. You know, you practice how you want to phrase whatever you're going to say. You can practice that too. But if they're saying something to you that's inappropriate, go ahead and codify the exact response and write down what they said, time, date, all of that pertinent information. Did folks, because I thought that was really, really important. And this is in Chicago. This is in a big city. I don't know if that, you know, became big news, the Water Department having a scandal like that. Did folks have any commentary based on this report, you know, how you would encourage or suggestions dealing with any of these types of things, them making sexual comments and what have you, or being denied seniority on the job? They had so many they had so many allegations of wrongdoing. Did folks have any response to that or thoughts on that piece?
This is something you ran pre-broadcast?
Yes, sir. It was the second audio clip where it was talking about the Water Department. The report, it gives some of the details. Seven African-American employees in the Chicago Department of Water filed a class action lawsuit in federal court today. The plaintiffs say they were subject to a poisonous work environment where black workers were spit on and ignored every single day. In the complaint, the workers claimed they were passed over or denied promotions in favor of white employees or workers from other plants and were not given the opportunity to transfer if they were unhappy. They alleged they were subjected to racial slurs and sexually harassed because of their race. Two employees who spoke to reporters today, one a 30-year veteran and another a 40-year veteran of the department, say they were nameless and faceless every day while they were responsible for bringing millions of Chicago residents fresh water. Today, they say they are no longer voiceless. The plaintiffs are seeking more oversight within the department. They are not putting a monetary number on specific damages yet. The plaintiff's attorney says they've already gotten calls from more than 30 other Water Department employees saying they, too, were subject to what they are calling a hostile work environment for decades. End of this report. I can post it if folks want to share. In the audio segment at the beginning, you just got to hear from some of the workers and them talking directly about, as I said, being denied seniority and black female workers being sexually harassed, some of the indignities and terrorism they experienced for decades. You got 30 and 40 year employees here.
Yeah, it sounds like on a broad level that they are doing the right thing. I would say internally, because there's no guarantees on anything. Of course, we understand that it's non-white victims of racist white supremacy who are literally powerless as individuals in these type of situations. But perhaps if there is also to an individual enough of physical evidence, meaning audio, visual, you know, audio examples, you know, of these different individualist incidents, paperwork, a paperwork path of showing evidence towards the allegations. In that light, there have been some success in past instances that have taken place on a job, but I would warn anybody who may not know. I'm assuming a lot of non-white people know that if nothing's automatic when it comes to in our situations of getting any semblance of justice. In the light was workplace racism or any other criminal activity that white people do on a daily basis, but to be as tight on the accumulation of evidence as possible, you know. And but I think it sounds like they're doing the right thing, and by it being a lot of people. That is coming involved. I think that's a good thing.
right on. Other folks who dialed in have comments, thoughts about the incident with Chicago Touch. I think they hit on a lot of things that we talk about here on a regular basis that people call in and report that they're having problems with in terms of the sexual comments, being denied promotions, being denied transfers, just poisonous work environment, as they said, any other kind. This is at the water department. This is not some, you know, little whatever rinky-dink outfit. This is in Chicago, no less, major city, millions of people where you've had this going on. Any other thoughts on this piece?
I, since nobody else is saying anything, I would say additionally, if the individual defendants don't personally know one another, I would think that's actually would be an advantage if they don't know each other personally. Being of something as huge as the water department in a major city, I would figure that most of them don't even know each other personally. And by them bringing their individual cases, and it can show a pattern that, you know, hey, this is happening not just with this person. The same thing happened with this person over here. That it would perhaps show some evidence that this is something that is actually a consciously constructed environment. Which actually is, you know, the practice of racist white supremacy. You know, it's always they use as a defense mechanism. Oh, that's just something that arbitrarily came up, but it doesn't happen a lot. You know, that sort of thing. Or so and so didn't know what they was doing. They didn't know they was affecting someone like that. You know, that's how they would probably defend their behavior. But yeah. Hopefully I made some sense on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, at the end, they said that since they filed this class action suit and have stepped forward publicly, that I think 30 additional people called or stepped forward to say that they, you know, also have had these sort of problems. So, I mean, it's hard for me mm-hmm. to imagine, you know, 35, 40 people all getting together and can spy. I mean, I don't know what, you know, if they're getting together at a library or what. I mean, it's hard to somebody have a house big enough to accommodate 40 people all coming to hang out at the same time and strategize how they're going to get a class action lawsuit against the water department. I mean, that is impressive alone if they were able to pull that off. But yeah, I mean, that just sounds like the system of white supremacy in play. Birds chirp, dogs bark. Arc white people practice racism, white supremacy. That sounds exactly like what it is. And you had these seven folks, and they said that they've been going through this for years, 30 years, 40 years. I mean, it makes sense. It's just, I'm not that old, but I mean, that is the existence of generations of black people working on a job and enduring white terrorism for 30, 40 years of nigger jokes and sexual harassment and denied raises and denied promotions. I mean, that is whole generations of grandparents and great grandparents and moms and uncles and aunts. That was their whole life. That's why we're doing this program, to try to solve some of those problems, because I mean, this is a gargantuan issue under racism, white supremacy, and something we should be devoting time and energy. Again, we should not have a whole lot of spectators. I want to make sure I remind folks this is not the broadcast. Just hang out, and I'm just going to, you know, listen in, see what they have to say. That's not what this is for. Any non-white person in the world, if you have a job, have had a job, think you might want to be employed at some point, this is going to be a major concern for you. If things are working out well on the job for you right now, tremendous. I'm glad for you, but I would encourage you to still be mindful, be paying attention to things that happen around you, because I'm sure racism, white supremacy is being practiced in your area, and just other things to be mindful of in the job. Always super important. Other folks have commentary, your own situation, or suggestions. If you have figured out some things that work well, we always need to hear that, policy and procedure related as well. Any other folks have commentary? still seeing hands up while folks are spectating or whatever they're doing, maybe enjoying the summer sunshine. Some of the folks who wrote in. Oh, I missed my email tab. Give me 1 second to scroll back to my email and I can pull up some of the other workplace racism folks that commentary that people wrote in. Let's see. Okay. Other workplace racism commentary from folks. Let's see. It's a black male. He's written in before. I think he's called in as well with some of the issues, problems he's faced on the job. He wrote in as well. His commentary, I was approached by a white female and her white husband. She asked me to pull shoe sizes for her. One size would be for her to try and the other to buy for her daughter. After they took a seat and I brought her the shoes, I left while she tried them on. I checked up on her and was sent on a second trip of to run to get what she wanted. I dropped off the next shoes and left again. We had no discussion other than what she wanted, the shoe sizes. Her husband stayed silent the whole time and just looked at me when I came. Not so long after my last delivery, the woman made up her mind. She brought a pair of shoes to check out to the checkout line alone. Her white husband was still sitting down. I walked up in front of her to see if she was ready to check out. She had the pair of shoes she wanted to buy out in her hands and cell phone out to take a camera picture to text to her daughter. After taking the picture with me still standing in front of her, she told me she was ready to check out. While I was ringing up her merchandise, she kept mentioning how she was buying this for her daughter and how she spoiled and how lucky she was. She told me she was 25 and still got things from her mother. She went on and on about her daughter, so I asked her, "How many daughters do you have?" She says, "Just one." Our sales team is trained to use a technique called celebrating the sale. So after I completed the sale with her, I told her, "I hope your daughter likes the shoes." She replied, "No question about it, she will love the shoes, although I'm sure she would rather have had you instead. But don't worry, I haven't sent her your picture yet." I was caught off guard and sort of laughed it off. I did not reply and walked away into the stockroom without making much more eye contact after that. I remembered a report when practicing racism is sexually arousing for white people, male and female. I suspected she knew her daughter having me in the system of white supremacy was an act of racism and incorrect. But because racism is entertainment for white people, her soliciting me to her daughter to have me would have been a form of entertainment. Who knows, maybe the white father would never know. It reminded me of a lesson Neely Fuller Jr. gives. The system of white supremacy is like a prison system. She knew nothing about me other than how I looked and that I was black. She was the warden visiting my cell and had a key. Insisting on an encounter between myself and her white daughter would have been an act of a prisoner engaging in improper contact with the prison master, whites, which I would receive no constructive result out of, become confused about racism, the prison system, and think this system is not so bad after all. And since the warden, whites, let me free to have sex with whites, this is not a prison after all. It's fun. Here she was buying a shoe for her daughter, would use for a day and put back in the box after she was done, the prison cell, and suggesting her daughter might want me instead. For what? To use at her convenience and put back when she was done with me, prison cell. Since I've started listening to the cows, I've recorded notes on racism on the job between myself, coworkers, and customers. Bravo. I'm giving my easy golf clap. That is outstanding. Taking notes, just something as simple as that. Like I said, it doesn't have to be that you're writing a novel. You're not writing a book or a thesis. It doesn't have to be super detailed. I think we've had folks who said, hey, you can literally invest 5 minutes, 10 minutes right now. I mean, just a few sentences, you know, time, date. You just need the pertinent information to capture the gist of it, and it can be invaluable. Your memory is not as good. None of us. Our memory is not as good as we think. Stress and racism can really rob us of some of our most efficient functioning. So take advantage. They got all this technology where you can store information, jot it down, make a few notes, and just keep it organized so that you can come back to it when you need it and get the details. Also, just in this encounter, I think he brilliant analysis. I think another aspect of the sex thing coming up on the job, which we just heard in the water department sketch as well, or not sketch, the allegations at the water department in Chicago. But I think with this report as well, I think he hit it right on the head in terms of what was happening in this encounter. And I think if anything, for folks who work in retail, might be good to keep this in mind, that this could have, I would say, doesn't even have to be retail, any sort. If you have any sort of employment where you know you're going to be coming in contact with white people, to keep that in mind, that it, you know, it does not seem to be unusual or strange for a white person to sexually proposition a black person on the job in a very crude way. Sometimes they can be very flattering about it. Sometimes they can be very joking and humorous about it. But this sort of thing seems to happen all the time. So maybe all of us should make sure that, okay, let me already think about that. You know, if someone comes at me, if a white person comes at me with a comment like that, what am I going to say to this person? You can tailor it for your context. The way you might respond if you're self-employed and this is a white vendor might be very different if you're, you know, working as a retailer, right? Your response might be very different, but just that way you're not caught off guard and you can think in advance, okay, this is pretty common. This is something I might have to deal with. This is what I'm going to say. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'll deal with that in the future. Any comments, suggestions on what our caller wrote in, being propositioned over a pair of shoes?
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. This is Jay from New York. Greetings to the callers and the listeners. Wanted to chime in real quick, and I'll try and address the last letter that you read. Wanted to double back to what the firefighter was talking about in reference to summer jobs for kids that are out of school. I kind of recall back in Brooklyn, I had applied for a position at Blockbuster. I don't know how many people remember. There used to be a chain of video stores called Blockbusters. Really popular. So I had by that time applying for that job, I probably had about three other jobs throughout other summers. So I had a lot of job work experience, had references from the other jobs. So I applied. They called me back, and they said I had to do a drug screen. I said, all right. So I went in. I kept a low haircut. So the guy said, we got a sample from your hair on your head, but I don't think, and this was a racist white supremacist, and of course at that time I was extremely confused. So he said, the sample is not enough that we've gathered from your hair, so we're going to have to get it from another location on your body. So I'm kind of like looking at my body thinking maybe I can grab it from my leg or something like that, because I wasn't going to, you know, in his presence, pull it from anywhere else. So he says, more than likely you're probably going to have to, you know, get a pubic hair and get that to us. But because somebody has to see you, you know, get the hair, like I have to take it. And I'm like, no, like, you know, at that point, and I think I'm 16 at this time. So I had taken a bus down to the location. And I said to myself, I sat there and thought for a little while. And of course he's like, hey, you know, we could start you tomorrow. And at this point he's getting a little too happy, you know, with the position that I'm in as I'm kind of trying to think about it. He's like, we can probably get you started tomorrow. All I need is that sample. It'll be quick. You know, I'll just go in. We can go into the back room. And I'm just sitting there saying to myself, all the things that my parents taught me, this just doesn't sound right. And it's a no. So I tell him, no, I'm going to go home, talk to my parents about it. So I go home, and the first thing my dad says is, you did the right thing. And then he actually put me in a car with him, and we drove back down to the Blockbuster, and he gave the suspected white supremacist kind of a piece of his mind for even kind of insinuating that I do that, especially, you know, I'm under 18, you know, to have that done. So I just wanted to kind of bring that story up to even show the types of things that they're doing, you know, to kids at an early age. And this person couldn't have been that old themselves. I'm thinking, you know, early 20s, they were a supervisor at the location. In reference to the Chicago water work environment, it's interesting as I think about individuals going 2 to 3 decades. Brings me back to a movie, Gus, and I forget the name of it, but I watched it after hearing about it on this show, about a non-white person who came in, and it's kind of filmed, I guess, in the 40s or the 30s, went into an environment where there were a ton of non-black people working with a ton of racist white supremacists in the environment that were making jokes and saying a ton of bad things. And this one non-white person got into the environment, and the other workers were just telling them, just deal with it, just go along with it, you know, we're working, don't cause any trouble. And that's kind of what this situation at the water plant reminded me of. Probably a ton of people that had been there for years, and every time a new person came in, probably just said, just go along with it, don't kind of ruffle any feather, don't make any trouble for the rest of us in here. So that's kind of what it sounded like to me, kind of like pictured right out that movie in reference to that situation. But just wanted to kind of add my 2 cents on that. I'll mute my line. Thanks.
I have not heard of that film. It reminded me of Mr. Fuller, if they want to get another reference, where I think he's had, I think, numerous segments where he's talked about counter-racist codification is pretty much designed for that sort of environment. And that's pretty much the exact illustration that he gave, going in some place where they're just nigger jokes all day long. Maybe they're calling you a nigger or other racist names. And that's just, you know, what they live and breathe. That's, you know, along with whatever the company does, that's what they do for their, you know, 8 hour or 10 hour workway. That's what it's going to be. You know, we make violins and tell racist jokes. We make tires and tell racist jokes. We fix cars and tell racist. That's what counter racist codification is for. So be prepared. Do not be surprised at all with regards to the system. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to share, either, I guess, suggestions in terms of what people have heard from some of the listeners, listener who wrote in about the shoe situation where this race soldier female propositioned him. Oh, yikes. That was really painful. Who propositioned him on behalf of her daughter or the situation with the Chicago Water Department, or if you had your own situation that you wanted to share, other folks who dialed in, if you had a hand up, you should be with us. We could watch the background noise. That would be helpful.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Good evening. How you doing, Gus? Carlos, this is The Voice from Florida. I really like the fact that you asked them. I think that was a very, very important question that you asked Mr. Fuller when you asked him if everything is perfect, everything seems perfect, I should say, is there any way, are they tacky and terroristic? And he says, yeah, even if it seems like everything is normal, they're still phony. And that's one of the reasons why I stay codified to myself, because every time I encounter with these suspected racists on a daily basis, it's always the greetings are phony, it's not genuine, and I just refrain from just even acknowledging them, even having any type of interaction with them as much as possible. And I know Mr. Fuller, he says you have to be, you know, courteous at all times, even sometimes more courteous than they are. But when I am engaged with somebody, I am very courteous. But I thought that was very important that you asked them. When it comes down to the situation in Chicago with the water, I know when I was working with the company down here, we used to, it was just a rotation of different people that had different issues with the company. And every time we would complain and go to HR, they would go to HR about it, we always see that person just randomly not in the meetings anymore. So me being with this company for 10 years, I've seen a lot of people go through different groups. There's always new faces in the groups. And I remember one time there was a group of them that was trying, this was like when I just got on with the company, it was a group of them that were trying to, a group of employees that were trying to assemble enough people to start a union. Because once you start a union, then a lot of these racist tactics and tackiness that a lot of these white supremacist managers, they're not able to enforce a lot of things because of that union. It kind of has your back. So this group that I've observed trying to start enough people to get a union behind this company, one by one over the years, I just seen them when they end up finding out who these individuals were, and just one by one, they were just disappearing in the meeting, just disappearing in the meeting. They'll find other ways to get rid of them. So when I heard that they organized, I know that it had to take some, like, real codified signals or meetings to do that, because I know once they catch you doing that, they'll find some way to get rid of you, you know, just quickly as possible. As far as when it comes down to the children working, I've noticed my ex had called me recently, and she told me about how her son and his cousin, they both applied for summer work because they have a summer program out here for the youth to be working, and they both applied. Now, she doesn't make as much money as her cousin, so her son and her cousin's son, he wasn't able to get the job. Her son got the job, but the cousin didn't get the job because his mother makes way more than my ex does. So I found that kind of to be weird. I don't know what the ramifications is. I don't know what the reason for that is, because it's just teens. And I felt like, you know, these two young boys that really want to go out there and just, you know, have a summer job and money in their pockets, but to be default by your parents' income, I've never heard that before. Maybe, you know, firefighter or anybody else could, you know, chime in and let me know how does that work, because I'm just baffled about the new techniques or how they go about things. But I'll mute my line, and I also have another update for about the race situation, and I'll talk about that later.
Oh, okay. Definitely want to hear about the raise situation. Anybody else that's got information on going about getting a raise, you should definitely be at the front of the queue. Did anybody have commentary on that where they are denying, given that as the excuse for not hiring a young person because their parents are gainfully employed?
I could be wrong, because I'm, you know, I got to, you know, retract my memory back from 40 years ago. But I do think with jobs that are set aside for quote unquote minors, part-time, they have to be part-time. And I think at that time, and I'm not sure about the day, but I think during that time, they also, it was based on, it's supposed to have been based on priority-wise, the cumulative income of that family would put you in a better position to get the job. Based on quote unquote need during that time. We're talking about the 1970s. I think it was aftermath of what Lyndon Johnson was doing, and it hadn't totally soaked up yet, you know, from the Vietnam War, because of course we know that's where all the money started going. At that point in time, it was done on purpose. It wasn't just like no accident. Oh, oops, we got to send this money. They knew what they were doing. But I think it was based on general income of the parents that gave that particular child more of an advantage of getting that job. And like I say, I'm talking about jobs that come from the local governmental or city government, and or I don't know. It has a federal connection to it. It had a federal connection to it also. It was based on it. I'm not talking about McDonald's or Burger King. Now that right there, I mean, they shouldn't even care on what your parents do.
Okay. So just making sure I understand, retired firefighter, you're saying, and this was some time ago, back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that it might have been, and these were for, I guess, maybe better quality jobs, not flipping burgers or washing dishes, with some federal program maybe, that it might have been, you might have had a better chance depending on your parents' income, that might have given you a better opportunity to get these jobs. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. You were making minimum wage. At that time, minimum wage was $1.50 an hour. I never forget that. That's how much you were getting an hour, $1.50 an hour at the time. And we're talking about early to mid-70s.
Okay. And the voice you dialed in from Florida, what you were saying was that the excuse that was being given for not hiring these young black people was that, oh, your parents are already gainfully employed, so, you know, you all don't really need a job that much, so we're not going to give you all this job. That's what you're talking about, right?
Correct. It's okay. And firefighters is pretty much on. I understand what you're saying, and it sounds about right, because it's for the state, the local parks. That's who was hired, the local parks, for the county. Like you said, the federal might be tied into it, so that makes sense. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that would kick in. That would kick in on that type of job. You know, a job assisting with the summer recreation program over the summer. The reason why I didn't have to think about it a whole lot, because at that time my mother was a single parent, so with five children. So, it was going to be a situation with her that was going to be, you know. We weren't going to have a situation where she made abundance of more money than was needed. More money that wouldn't qualify for something like that. So, yeah.
I just think they always come up with an excuse to not hire black people, any and all black people, black children, males, females, and they can always come up with a reason. I think white children who come from well-off families, if they want a job for the summer, I've never heard of them being denied because, you know, nah, you don't need any money, your parents are. I have never heard that at all. That is absurd, in my opinion, to just say, yeah, we're not going to hire these young black people, because, I mean, what I hear all the time is black people are so lazy, you know, black young people are so lazy and they don't want a job. And, you know, why don't they have any, you know, fortitude to go out and do things? Our generation, that's, you know, the total thing. That's what I typically hear. So to have young people that want to work being denied that opportunity, like, wow, that's white supremacy at work, I would say. Other folks who dialed in, who have a hand up, if you had commentary you wanted to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hey, Gus.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I just wanted to add two quick notes in agreement with what Firefighter had just stated. When I was growing up in Queens in New York, they used to have, and I think Roz and anybody else, the other caller from Brooklyn can remember, they used to have what was called SYEP, which was a summer youth employment.
And there used to be massive, I mean, at the place where we were at in Queens, it would be the Armory, and it would just be massive amount of black females, young males, and teenagers that would go out for these jobs. I do not see those programs anymore. My father even said that they started to remove a lot of those programs, and those were in the early 90s. So I think what that gentleman is stating, even in the state of Florida, is probably accurate. The other thing that I wanted to discuss was, and it was a clip you played on Saturday, but I've been meaning to say it for a while in reference to PG County, Prince George County in Maryland. I have a lot of friends, quote unquote, that live and are very successful and live out in that particular area. And one of the main ways that people, non-white people, make money there is through what's called government contracts and different government services. And I was talking to a gentleman that works out there, and he has contracts and things of that nature with the government. We were talking about racism, white supremacy, and he had the same stance as many other non-white people have, is that, you know, economic empowerment and, you know, starting your own business, and that's how you can never said that you can solve racism, but almost protect yourself from it. And I remember we were talking, and I said, well, who controls the minority contracts? And he said, what do you mean? I said, who controls if black people get the money? He said, the government. And I said, okay, well, the government, isn't that white people? And he started laughing. And I said, so if white people ever decided that we're going to try to get a creative way to remove you Negroes from getting money, it'd be accurate to say that you wouldn't have that many businesses anymore. And he said, I never thought of it like that. And even in those particular areas, I always remember Mr. Fuller talks about it, is that even when you think you're not supporting the system of white supremacy, you're supporting the system of white supremacy. Because also a lot of those businesses, because it's in Washington, D.C., which is really the reason why that PG County hub is very successful, is because they're connected to the federal government. Well, the federal government is just the law arm of the system of racism, white supremacy. So you have a lot of people that are, I know a guy that he owns a defense contracting company, does very, very well for himself. But the whole basis of that company is selling weapons to go do what? 9 times out of 10, they're going to go shoot or kill some non-white people. So any way that we look at it, it's all about the system of racism, white supremacy. And I've been meaning to bring that up for a while, but I just thought it was important since you played that clip on Saturday. I'll be in my life.
I think the clip he was talking about, wait a minute, I got confused about my clips. I thought he was talking about the clip where they were investigating that area for, I think, the school. They were saying they think it was fraud in the school system, but I don't think that was
the clip. Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, okay. Woohoo! Should have trusted myself. Yes. Yes, from this past weekend. Yeah, very prosperous area. Black people making a lot of money. I don't know if they're self-employed or just doing, as you touched on, working in D.C. probably from being so close to the Capitol, but still being subjected to racism. And their children still being subjected to racism. They just cannot believe that these Negro children are doing so well in school. Got to be cheating. Yeah, very good. I'm glad you were able to have constructive dialogue that didn't lead to fisticuffs, and person was able to accept logic about who controls finances. And that was again, even though it wasn't talking about government contracts and what have you, but the same thing was at the beginning clip that I played today, just talking about how non-white business owners just do not get access to the same types of capital. They just do not allow them to get those type of loans and things to start a business or upgrade, you know, improve your business, that sort of thing, grow your business, getting access to more finances. White people, racist man, racist woman, and racist child, they are dominating right now. That's what we're trying to, the problem we're trying to correct. Do we have other folks who dialed in who had commentary they wanted to share? If you have a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
This is my first time calling. This is the caller from Tennessee. I just had a comment for the caller who said something about starting a union. I'm a union employee, and I just wanted him to know that the union does not protect black people. It's a good old boy system, and they do not protect blacks, which is the reason I got out of the union. And ever since I got out of the union, At my company, I've been harassed. I've had a tire flatten. I've had somebody hit my car with a fist, and I know they hit it with a fist because the dent is, like, on my fender and hood, like, in the crease right there. Like, it's no way I could have hit something and done it. And I'm a little nervous, sorry. But I told the security at work about both incidents, and we have cameras. And both times, the security told me that they didn't see anything, which is impossible. I even asked him if he could tell me when I pulled into work that morning if I had a dent in my car, because I seen it when I went out for lunch. But I know when I came to work that morning, I didn't have a dent in my car. Just like the incident with the tire being flat, I know somebody did it who got out the door before me because I could still hear the air coming out the tire when I got to my car. But it's just like a double jeopardy. The company and the union is all in one. They don't protect black people. And that's it.
Wow. First-time caller, thank you so much for dialing in. I guess if I could get in two quick questions, caller in Tennessee, that's B. Moore, one of our longtime listeners, investors. That's her former stomping ground. Two quick questions I wanted to ask, and then if folks have any suggestions, because this seems really serious, direct, in my view, violence and terrorism that you're being subjected to. The first question, did you call the police with regards to your vehicle being damaged?
The first time when I called the police, it's a private company, so the police, they have a hard time getting onto the property. Like, they have to go through the security. So it's really, I don't know, like, even, I don't even know how I could get the police involved. Like, the security is the police at that company. I can't explain it. I'll try to come back with better details next week. But they, like, write, the security writes reports, and just like a police officer would do.
Wow. Okay. Well, that, at least that's better information about the type of environment that this happened in. Is it that you're experiencing all of this increased violence and hostility because you left the union? That's what you're thinking is happening?
Yes, I do. But even before I left the union, it was all kinds of racism, like Negro written on the walls. Just even the supervisors. I'm not familiar. I don't know if... Well, I'm in the South, so I don't know if people really know what I'm talking about when I say the good old boy system. It's like the supervisors pick on all the non-white people. Like, you have a group of white men in a huddle all day talking, and if, like, one black person talk to another black person, the supervisor come up and just break it up, and it's just crazy. I have a lot. I probably need to write notes so I can give people better details next time I call. But I just really wanted to say something because he was, you know, going on about creating a union, and I just want black people to know that the union doesn't do anything for black people or non-white people.
Wow. I appreciate it, and I'm anyone who's listened to the Workplace Racism Program specifically knows I'm a big advocate of note-taking for the job. I hope I've mentioned that on the program already today. I'm a big advocate of that because exactly what you just said, ma'am, it helps you. You can give specifics. You can be clarity, and you can go right and in-depth because you'll just have your notes. You can just make little bullet points. I'm a big, big fan of that. I think I think it's helped me. I think it's been very beneficial for a lot of folks for workplace racism. Anybody have suggestions once it gets that hostile on the job? I know people have talked before about, you know, definitely if it gets to a point where it's compromising your safety and health and well-being, to definitely make sure the resume is updated and be thinking, is this something that you really want to remain vested in? But any suggestions if, you know, she's going to remain here, or at least for the time being, things you would encourage that she do to protect her health, well-being, and property, because that's major property damage, in my opinion, a vehicle.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. The first thing I would ask, because I also worked in an environment where they had their own personal security, but I would, as we talk about on the show all the time, go back to the manual, your manual, just to check to see what the manual speaks to in reference to the security personnel. Because if the security personnel is not allowing the sheriff or the police to get involved, then they should have taken a police report that you could have for your insurance or for whatever claims that you are going to make against that, so that you wouldn't have to basically pay out that bill on your own. So I would, one, go back to the hand guide and check on what the role of the security, because if they have their own personal security, the hand guide would definitely speak to that in reference to what they're allowed to do on site, because that kind of goes into individuals' protection. If something happens to you on the property, et cetera, who you're supposed to call. So I would definitely look at that, and it'll probably be under security within the hand guide. So that would be the first area that I would look into in reference to the environment itself. It sounds like it's a terroristic environment. And unfortunately, I worked in one of those small areas in this place where I said that they had their own security. And because sometimes these companies encompass the town, it's like the only, you know, well-paying position, it's tough for individuals to kind of find a way out and still earn the same living that they're earning at those locations. So I would just say continue to write down as much as you can. Observe other individuals within the environment to see if anybody else may be going through that situation. I don't say go up and talk to any non-white person, because you never know, they'll go back, especially if they're in the union. But just kind of notice that somebody else may be going through the same thing. And as you're taking down your notes, maybe you can, you know, find some commonality with other people that are experiencing the same thing and do the same thing that they're doing out at that water plant in Chicago. So that's my 2 cents on it.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I the first and foremost thing that I would say to the new lady caller is, despite your nervousness, you did a very, very good job of describing something that happens a lot, and you're pretty precise on how it works out, because just from the standpoint, and it's similar to what I said about the Chicago situation, whereas it may be an advantage that the people are strangers to one another. You and I are strangers to one another, and that is the same experiences that I have witnessed on the job that I was on for 20 and a half years. And I got out of the union within about maybe 5 years of me being on that job as a firefighter, primarily because of the same reasons, just like you said. Primarily most of the non-white Black people who are in the union is for things such as the medical insurance policies that they have are a little bit more cheaper, but it was always constant fighting. Matter of fact, two of my looking like it's going to be a lifetime association, we met on picketing your local firefighters union down here for racist practices. So it's nothing new. It's a smaller gangster operation, and I'm not just using that as a metaphor. It literally unions have as the head of them people who are associated with quote unquote. Organized crime on a level that's called the mafiosa, whatever, stuff like that. But we also know that the system of racist white supremacy is the greatest quote unquote crime family. So I think you're accurate on what you're doing. Now, as far as suggestions are concerned, the security forces, from what you described, I'm pretty sure they know the intricacies of the quote unquote law and the police, even the police, if they are willing to try to do something, it makes it complicated. It makes it quite complicated on what you get your resume ready, because you don't want to compromise your safety. If they are slashing your tires, something like that, it actually is like a potential life threatening warning, so to speak, with terror involved in it. That's what would be the sign that it would tell me. Anyway, just keep being vigilant, and when you see a situation whereas it's unattainable, get out of there. Get out of there and go somewhere else, as far as that concern. Thank you.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Any of the other callers, any suggestions for our first-time caller in Tennessee who is dealing with, sounds like, just an overwhelming amount of direct violent hostility from the race soldiers at her job?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi. It's the voice again. I want to say to the new caller, thank you so much for calling in. You are totally correct when you say about the union, the good old boys, they don't work for you. When I was making a reference, about the group of individuals that were starting the union, and they're the ones who got plucked off one by one by one. But they are non-black, so it wasn't no big thing for me, because, you know, not my peoples. But it was just an interesting observation to see that they were getting plucked off as well. You know, anything that affects a company, they'll pluck you off as well. And on top of that, the HR, I have a big case that I'm working on right now. I had got fired from my previous job, the same job I was telling you about, for 10 years. It's a huge company down here, and I have a great case. It's real. You have to be real tactical when you're in an at-will state like Florida, Texas, California. You have to be real tactical about it. So what I was able to do, I was able to gain my case through, and Gus always, and I've been doing this before I even got on the show, but what Gus says, and he emphasized all the time, is take notes. Please take notes, because let me tell you something. I was codified like that on my own. I've always been an observant person. Like I told on the show before, you know, when you look at your coworkers, you don't have to mingle with them. You don't have to engage with them, but study them. Because by me studying them, I was able to get a lot of allies that was non-black. And when you know their weakness and their strength, you can also use their strength to end up attacking the racist individuals on an indirect level. And I was able to do that. I was also able to gain information from the racist individuals through the same allied person. So I have a stack, I mean, when I say I have a stack of detailed notes, it is just, it's just unreal. But you have to do that. And like you say, I've went to the HR, and when I brought that up to HR, that's how I got fired. Because HR, they have an agreement. And see, that's what I was trying to tell you. Like, even with my allies, I have one of the guys that I was saying before, he covers different routes. He goes to different routes. He sees everybody's route. He knows that my route was one of the best routes on there as far as performance-wise, as far as up to code, everything on the route was on point. There's other people that could have got fired just like this, have got people in their territories and overlooked their faults, their neglects. But what happened was the HR, when I approached HR with my issues, HR went to my boss, and my ally individual, he is close to my boss because my boss has to report to him. He has to report to the boss because he has to let the boss know what's going on in the field, also when he covers shifts, whatever. So this is his right-hand man. So by me having that ally, I was able to get information that HR went into my boss's office and told him that I went there. Now you can't. I've already looked through the manual. You can't breach confidentiality like that. So when my boss told my ally that this information can't leave these walls, my ally came right back and gave me that same information. So that's why I say documentation. If you got people on the job that you feel I wouldn't say comfortable, just study them. You'll know who you can feel out, who you can use to your advantage, and who you can't. I'm very sorry that you're going through this, and I wish I had, like, a solid solution for you. But just like everybody said, just follow those steps. Report back to us next week. See what's changed. And as far as the security, I was a security supervisor. So I know when the residents call, if the residents call, unless it's like an extreme emergency, the residents will call directly. We'll have to let them through the gate. Otherwise from that, sometimes the residents call us, and we have to make that decision. So I know the security at the job, if it's a decision that they make, then it's like it's their judgment. So if they don't feel like calling the police because they feel like it's nothing serious, they probably don't have no information. Even if they did have information, they're not going to tell you. They're going to say, hey, we don't have any information on what's going on, this and that. So they might be obligated to make a judgment call. But like the caller in New York said, just study your manual. Everybody's job manual is different. See what you can get out of this. And I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, the voice. Yes, Mr. Steele. Just let me check really quick, Mr. Steele. The caller in Tennessee, did you have anything that you wanted to add before we heard from Mr. Steele? Just making sure. I didn't know if that was you were going to add something.
About the security, the last time I tried to call the police, well, this was the tire incident was the first incident, and I was told that the security report is just as good as the police report, and they don't have to allow the police on the property because it's private property. So that's what I was told. And I'm not really scared at work or anything. I'm just at a point where I'm just, like, I'm hostile. Like, as soon as I go to work, I can feel my blood pressure going up. It's like I'm just angry at everybody. I don't want people to talk to me. I just have an attitude. I don't have a attitude, but if you speak to me, you'll know that I don't want to be spoken to. Like, I can't explain it. I'm at a point where I'm even bringing it home now, and I forgot which caller it was. And the only reason I am at that job is, like he said, it's one of the better paying jobs in this city. Like, I have a degree, and I can get any job in my field, and it won't pay me more than this job that I work at now with people who can't even read, and I won't get paid as much money as I do now.
Can't even read. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Steele. Proceed.
This is Ken Steele, and I am in San Dimas, California at the moment. And, you know, I was just listening to the caller and the other listeners and their suggestions, and I think that the suggestions that have been given so far are good. However, I think that there is a serious there's a serious chasm between the gravity of the situation and I am detecting the response that you're giving. So if people are at your job and they are slashing your tires, that right there is a violent act, and it needs to be reported to the police. Don't report it to their private security firm. Don't just tell a manager. You need an actual police report from law enforcement. You need to call. Basically, if the local law enforcement are not up to the task of creating a report, then you need to call the other law enforcement agencies in your area, be it the sheriffs, be it the state police, and then you need to get somebody over to you and you need to get them to write a report down. I don't care if they are very flippant towards you. I don't care if they're very disrespectful towards you or if they don't take your concerns seriously at all. You need to get that documented with law enforcement. And then also, you must, at this point, you must get on record how you feel about all of this going down. And you need to get your health diagnostics associated with your current state there. I suggest perhaps you might want to invest in some sort of self blood pressure monitoring system. I think they're only like $20 on Amazon.com. You can get that and then you can take a log of what your blood pressure is when you're at home versus what your blood pressure is at work. And then you can also you have to go report to a medical professional and get your blood pressure taken. That's going to be key in forming any sort of pain and suffering claims that may come with this next step that I'm going to tell you. You have to look up an employment lawyer in your area. You have to find an employment lawyer that takes your situation seriously and is very familiar with the laws in your jurisdiction. Quite frankly, the fact that your employer advised you not to go to the police regarding this, to me, that sounds like something that a lawyer is going to need to discuss with their legal counsel as well, because it sounds to me like you may be entitled to damages. You are being negatively affected at this workplace. You are being physically threatened. Your safety is in danger, and you have to take steps to take care of this. Otherwise, it's going to get worse. You are seeing across the country that workplace violence is becoming more and more frequent. The degree to which people are affected by this violence is also increasing, and the severity of the violence is increasing as well. So, do not take anything lightly that you are seeing on the job. Also, understand that their internal systems, be it their human resources department, their security apparatus, is all there set up to help them, not you. So you have to go around them, and you have to take those extra steps. I'm saying this as emphatically as I can. Please, please, please begin to take these steps. If you're getting that affected negatively by this employer and this environment, you have to get legal recourse. That's, I'm in my opinion, the only correct way to proceed.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. The police aspect, I think I would really have to go and visit them on my own, if you haven't already. Like, that just, everything about this, as he said, the escalating nature of it, I mean, it's super serious to me. I know, I appreciate you said that you didn't feel fearful, that you were just upset and it's impacting your blood pressure. All of those, I mean, just damage to your vehicle, I mean, it just... the severity of the situation, exactly as Mr. Steele said, it just seems extremely serious in terms of, you know, I want to action on this. I would want to visit the police if you haven't already, and in detail, like review all matters. If the security from the job, if they issued a report on this, like a written report of the incident that happened on their property with photographs, great, you can take that too. But I would definitely want to speak with enforcement officials. If you want to talk to a local attorney, as Mr. Steele advised, great. But I mean, wow, just the severity of it. And I think you also said you're like bringing this home to your family, right? Because it's so stressful, which, I mean, it sounds stressful. It sounds stressful to me just hearing about it. Like, you, is that, did I hear that correctly as well?
Yes, okay. I do. The thing with the police, I'm just concerned about proving it, because I don't have any kind of way to prove it, because the security is telling me that they can't see it on camera.
Your report is the proof.
Did you take pictures of, you know, what the damage that you said, the tire, I guess it was two different ones at least, right? The tire, and then you said you think someone maybe took their fist and pounded on the vehicle.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, I would. If you took pictures, I would just go and report those two incidents. And, you know, if the job, if they gave you a report, since their security handled it or what have you, if they gave you a report, great. If they're saying they don't have cameras, that the cameras didn't get it, okay. Do you at least have a written in the background? Is there any way we can either turn it down or – okay, great. If they don't have video footage of the incident, okay, they, at least for these types, they generate what they call an incident report or something. If you have something like this happen on the property where you have major property damage to an employee's vehicle, they should have something so you can at least take their written reports to corroborate that, yes, these incidents have happened and you want to report it directly to your local police. Did they give you any sort of written report from the local security that you reported this happened and this is what they have to say about it?
I'm sorry. Yes, I have three written reports for the incident reports from security, because before the tire, I had an incident where they were sabotaging my tools, like gluing them and pouring oil on them and stuff like that. And I had an idea of who I thought done it, so I reported it to security. So I have three incident reports with pictures, but no proof. Well, you know, it came back inconclusive. They didn't find anything.
Can I be heard? Can I be heard, Gus?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to add, I do agree with Mr. Steele and Gus in reference to the seriousness of this matter. I just want to kind of shine a little bit of light in reference to sometimes in environments like this, and the caller can definitely let me know if I'm right, these security agencies, when they get to that level, when they're operating in the way that they're operating, they kind of operate hand in hand with the local police as well. So there are times, and I experienced it with some situations that were reported back to HR when I was working in my environment. Incidents will be reported. After the incidents are reported, the police either are going to kind of weigh in and sway with the individual personal security department. And they kind of work with one another. It's no different than the DA's office and the same things that are going on in the large major cities. But the thing that I am very, and I just want to just say this, because if you're in a small area, if you get all of them kind of in an environment where they feel that you're coming after them, if they kind of work in that tandem, I just don't want it to get to a point where she is now kind of in a situation where the local police, along with the security force, are kind of deeming her as a troublemaker. And I just want to be careful with that. And if I agree with Mrs. Steele, like I said, if you're going to go that route and kind of pushing it to the next level, just get the resume ready and just get ready to get out of that environment. But to stay in that environment
and to be on a property with security personnel that's kind of like private, and then you're in that environment where they're not really doing anything, I would just really caution that, unless you're just willing to say, all right, you know, that's it, I'm going to leave, and as you're leaving, get ready to do a file a suit and go that route. But I wouldn't do that while still at that location. That's just my commentary on it.
Can I be heard?
Oh, we can hear you, Mr. Steele. I got disconnected while I was saying I would encourage going to enforcement officials. I would go myself. I would go to them directly if it was my situation, even though the caller that just spoke. I think that is totally logical, particularly if you're in a small town. And certainly whites always network. That is the system of racism, white supremacy. That is absolutely logical that sort of thing could happen. That is a logical concern. Mr. Steele?
Yes. You know, you may want to look into what rights you have regarding federal time off. You might, and, you know, what time off looks like on your work. I personally would take some time away from that environment and use that time away from that environment to find a new plantation to work on while I am formulating my case against them, simply because you are in danger. If they're pouring oil on your tools, that means that they're creating an unsafe work environment for you to operate in. You have no idea what kind of slip and fall situation that they are constructing for you, so that, you know, you go in and then you step on an oil patch or something like that, and you slip on your back and you hurt yourself and you make yourself unable to work for anybody. So I would get out of that environment as soon as possible. It sounds pretty violent. It sounds like they are not hesitating to create very dangerous situations for you. And on top of that, you know, it's my belief after hearing everything that you've reported that your life may be in danger. And I don't take that, and I'm not saying that lightly. I'm not trying to, you know, create a situation. I just want for you to understand exactly how serious and how dangerous is the situation that you're in. Please, please, for your own safety, look at other options. Look at removing yourself from there as soon as possible and pressing charges, period.
I totally agree with that, Mr. Steele, and what Gus mentioned in reference to filing a report. I would do the same. And if you have been on the job, as Mr. Steele mentioned, for more than a year, you should be eligible for FMLA, that's the Family Medical Leave Act, and you should at least be able to get, you know, 8 to 12 weeks off while still employed with them. You'll still have your benefits. I would definitely go and seek counseling sessions while you're on FMLA. And to Mr. Steele's point, go to a doctor's office, get yourself checked out, get some blood pressure, systems at home that you can kind of take your own self-assessment, but get everything documented as well from the professionals that you go and see, and then be able to kind of start building your case from there. But all the best to you.
And update us, and this is not from a voyeuristic, like, you know, like I said, this is this broadcast, the workplace racism broadcast specifically, this is not like, you know, we're just entertained hearing strife from people's lives on their jobs and how they're being terrorized. I know I'm interested, hopefully, so that people can figure out some things that work well, that they can either think on their own, can think of some strategies to help solve some of their problems that are happening, or if they get help from some of the listeners, input from the broadcast, great. But just hearing like, oh, okay, these things work well for solving these types of problems, however you decide to proceed with things. So if you can, you know, kind of let us know what you decide to do in handling things, that would be grand. I do know, as was just suggested, Dr. Cambot is a big advocate of going to see a doctor, mental health professional, and reporting how the trauma that you're experiencing on your job is impacting you, your blood pressure. And you said this is you're carrying this stress over into your relations with your family members, to share all of that with them. And these different incidents continuing to happen, acts of violence against your property, and you share all of that. So you get documentation where they can say, oh, yeah, this, the doctor can report about how it's impacting your blood pressure. Mental health professional can do the same. That puts you in a much better position having documentation for all of that. Other folks that dialed in, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate after tremendous and persistence at 3.07 a.m. Friday morning. Stacy in the U.K. is with us. Stacy, I don't know if you had input for the female caller or if you wanted to update your own situation, but you should be with us as well. Are you there?
I guess.
Greetings.
I apologize for last week. I was with you, and then I guess a good thing did actually fall asleep. But my sleep patterns are so disrupted by everything. So, but apologies for that. I think with the female caller, I would agree with everything that everybody has said, not least because it really does sound dangerous. And I don't think she should take it lightly. She'll know her situation better than everyone else, but I would definitely go to the police and have your own records. And I've done that in the past. Even if you don't pursue things in the long run, at least you've got things documented. And I'm planning to do a very similar thing because of stuff that I'm dealing with, which I don't think is anywhere near as physically dangerous as what she's encountering. So yeah, I just agree with everybody else really. And on the union side of things, I did ask the question a couple of weeks ago about unions. I mean, I have had both good and bad experiences with unions, but I asked the question because I really don't trust them, to be frank and honest. And I think it really is worth a program in its own right just to really get to grips with how beneficial they are to individuals or not. I am part of a union as a member, and I would, in my circumstance, remain part of the union because I do think there is a level of protection or deterrent sometimes. For, you know, against managers thinking they can just act out against you, but I wouldn't trust them. I have recently become part of a union sort of arrangements within my organisation, only because it will give me better insight into processes and employment law and training. And that's in part to, again, act as a bit of a deterrent for some of the managers in the organisation, but to give me better insight. But I wouldn't trust the unions because sometimes they're just way too close to management. And our unions are politically affiliated, which in itself is very suspect sometimes. Gus, I do have my update, but I'll stop there unless you want me to give my update now.
Let's see. Do we have any other folks before? I guess we can make a definitive transition. Were there any final suggestions for our first-time caller in Tennessee? Just making sure we didn't leave out anything, and then we can move forward. If Stacy wants to share a personal situation, that's fine. Any other final suggestions for our call in Tennessee? Okay, assume folks got their final word in on that. I guess if you, unless you want to take a moment, we can. Oh, we did have other people who called in, so I'll leave it to you. If you would like to tell us your personal situation now, you can do so. We did have other folks who have called in who've not shared, so we might have. You have the option if you want to yield the floor or if you want to continue to share.
I'll give my update. People have finished commented on the last situation because that did sound quite serious to me. Do you want me to go ahead? Yeah.
Proceed.
Okay. Hello to everybody else on the call as well. I just as a quick summary, I mean, I've been going through I'm trying to say this really quickly. I guess I've been calling in over the last couple of months about somebody who was allegedly supporting me on a project who has been pretty much disruptive over the past year, and that behaviour has been encouraged by management, and recently he accused me of shouting at him. I told him or management that he would need to formalise his complaint. They came back and said he's not going to do that, and in the meantime formalise it or withdraw. He didn't withdraw his accusation, but they said he wasn't going to formalise the complaint. In the meantime, they encouraged his manager, who was also a black female, to raise her concerns about me, which she did. That resulted in a two-hour meeting where I had to listen to her express a number of concerns about me, which I was able to address in that meeting and demonstrate that it was absolute nonsense, and that, you know, fact there was, you know, documented evidence that I'd sent her, which just disputed some of the things that she was claiming, and or where actually it's because of how management were mismanaging the situation, why some of the things she thought had taken place were not as minimum she was viewing them. I also talked about the fact that a director in my organisation had been physically aggressive towards me a couple of weeks ago. This had been going on over a year, where she was pretty much just walking into me, walking so hard towards me that I had to move out of the way to avoid collision. But a couple of weeks ago, she did walk into me, and I did, push past me, and I did report that to one of the group directors. And also, what had happened over the last year is that one of the young people who come into my organisation to help out sometimes on projects, they're not member of staff, but they come in on a voluntary basis and they do get paid, you know, for their time, etc., but they're not paid members of staff. She had originally started off really well with me, you know, we were really friendly. She used to come into the building and hug me, and because of how I'm being treated in the organization, steadily people, you know, will avoid speaking to me or, you know, start to misbehave towards me. And this person had brushed past me in the organisation a year ago, laughed about it. I raised complaint about it, and it was basically brushed under the carpet. That was an incident where I would try to get hold of security footage, but because of the laws, in the UK, it wasn't actually captured, because not everywhere in the building can be recorded in that way. And the reason I'm summarising all of that is because when my director had pushed past me, it got to a stage where I just thought, okay, this has just gone way beyond. So I did speak to him, the group director, a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things he had said to me was to give some thought as to whether or not I wanted to make it a formal complaint, or whether I wanted it to be handled, through sort of mediation and informal routes. And I went away to think about that. And, it's been going on for years. So I had decided, look, I'm going to give this some real thought, because obviously it's daunting to have to go through that kind of process. And as I said, I don't particularly trust the unions, but these things do impact on your health in a major way. And there's a point at which, when people feel that they can get physical, it's just, you know, you do have to really think about how you're going to proceed, and whether or not that kind of behaviour will only escalate. And quite frankly, it is. Including with the young person who's coming into the building. I think, you know, whereas it did deter her behavior for a couple of months, she has, over the last couple of weeks, been escalating her behavior again, including coming as close to me as she can, just to goad me into a response, I think twice this week. had done the same thing to me. She's not actually touching me, but she, you know, it's that close. She might as well, you know, it's, there's only, you know, she's pretty much brushing past me, but actually it's just barely touching, but it's that close, and looking in my face as she's doing it. And, you know, she wants to provoke a reaction in me. So last week I had decided to send the notes from the meeting that took place on the 5th of May, and that was where they brought this black female in to express her concerns about me. And it took me a long time to type up those notes, because actually, I'll be honest, emotionally it was really difficult for me, because, you know, it's just constant attacks. Sent those notes last week, and I realised that when she had summarised her list of accusations against me, there was one that we didn't go through in that two-hour meeting. And that related to we have to handle correspondence that will come into the organisation. Some of it will go direct to the sort of chief exec's team, and sometimes it comes into teams across the organisation, and we have to respond. Sometimes we're responding on behalf of the chief exec, so we might write a response as if it's from the chief exec or senior management, or we respond acknowledging and making decisions as to whether or not we need to involve management, whatever. And the reason why I'm explaining that is because they're very technical responses sometimes, and we're given the timeline as to when we're we're supposed to respond to letters based on various different criteria. Now, the little race soldier that had complained about me, part of his role is to manage for our team when allocating those correspondence to various people across the team. And that is pretty much all he does. So the outstanding accusation was that he had... I do not do mine on time, and therefore that's impacting on him, which is not fair, and that sometimes he has to do follow-up, and he has been sending emails to me, which he doesn't always get a response from me, and it's not fair. She's concerned about it, and obviously it's impacting on him. So I asked for clarification on that point, but I deliberately said, can you send me written response, because I didn't want to have another meeting. Plus, these things, in terms of our organisational policy, we have what is a dignity at work policy, which part of it is also based on a person's perceived perception of how your work, you're treating them. And my managers apparently are using that economically, in that, you know, they're basically saying anything that they've perceived as misbehaviour on my part is valid. Now, the policy does acknowledge that if you perceive that you're being treated, then that, you know, that should be listened to by management. But what it does not say is that they should not, or rather what it does say is that they should investigate such claims and not just take them as truthful. So I keep being told about, you know, well, this is how they're perceiving the situation. And in the instance where somebody is actually doing my work, that goes way beyond perception and can be quantified, which is why I asked for a written breakdown of what he's been doing on my behalf, which particular correspondent he's responded to, how much time it's taken, and also copies of the emails that he sent me that I have not responded to. That resulted in correspondence last week where this black female is now claiming that, you know, oh, well, she doesn't remember actually saying what she said, and that she didn't, you know, it just went through a load of fake correspondence. And, you know, I ended up saying, no, that you were very specific. You said it. My notes are accurate. I want written clarification, and I want you to quantify and also provide evidence of the work that he's been doing. Friday morning, she came up to my desk and she said, can I have a word? And I said, yeah, just give me 2 minutes. She went back to her desk, and when I finished doing what I was doing, which was probably about 5-10 minutes later, I said, I'm ready, can we go into a meeting room? She then called in my manager, and I turned around and we started the meeting, and I realized actually that my manager's now in this room. Why is she in here? And I asked the question, why are you here? And the black female said, oh no, she brought her in because she was part of the email correspondence in the previous meeting. So I said, well, that's fine, but you didn't tell me you were bringing her into this meeting. And she said, well, I didn't think it'd be a problem. So I said, I want to understand why you brought her in and what is this meeting about? And we went on like that for a while. My manager was also in saying, well, I guess it's because, maybe she just thought it would be quicker rather than her having to go and feed back to me. And I'm guessing that's what she meant. And I said, I still want to know why you're in here and what the purpose of this meeting is. And this went on for a while. And in the end, there was an acknowledgement that she had brought her in to because she was concerned about future meetings. So she wanted her in there as an observer. So I said, oh, well, that's fine. In that case, I'm going to bring this meeting to an end until I can get my witness. And so that was that. And then my head of team at that time had been working from home. I got an email from her, invite for a meeting for the following Monday for a catch-up. So I emailed her back and said, why can you just clarify what this meeting is about? And she didn't respond to me. So this Monday, I got pulled into a meeting by my head of team, and in summary, telling me she doesn't want me to take any notes. Why did I copy her into all of that correspondence? The original meeting on the 5th of May was supposed to be informal, and I've gone into way too much detail, and we need to get on with work, etc., etc. So I said, well, in the first instance, clearly none of this has been handled informally, and you knew all about the alleged informal meeting before I did, because you raised it with me beforehand, and you also told me what she was going to discuss, which she seemed to have forgotten. And I said, I said, and furthermore, as I said before, they're making a number of accusations against me. I take that seriously. And she's, we went into this stupid discussion again about it's not accusation, it's their perception. So I said, oh no, if he's doing my work, that goes way beyond perception, and I need to understand this. And again, so we went through that nonsense. I'd also raised concerns about my line management arrangements, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. It should have been an interim arrangement that this current race soldier is line managing me. That should have come to an end at the end of May. I'd already been raising concerns about her, so my manager again was claiming that I hadn't told her about that situation, and again she was raising that. So I said, well, I did tell you, and the fact that you're sitting here claiming I didn't is concerning to me, and the way that this meeting has been handled demonstrates your lack of regard for me and also your bias. And I expressed discomfort several times during the meeting, and in the end had to ask for the meeting to come to an end. I then emailed my group director on Tuesday. He got a 3-page letter summarising what had gone on across all of those incidents. So he has now come back and has said outside, and because I did tell him I wanted to formalise grievances, he has now come back and said it's a very, very serious, he considers it very, very serious. So the whole thing is now under investigation, I'm just waiting to hear from HR. But this black female, for example, I was supposed to be meeting with her today to discuss something. She clearly is now walking around the building, and I'm being told she's very anxious. So I'm sure they've given out the impression that she is now scared of me, although they haven't quite come out and said that. So I cancelled the meeting today on the basis that I need an observer, but I hadn't seen an email from her actually that she had actually decided that she didn't want to go ahead with the meeting, but I could give her comments by email. It was again relating to the little race soldier, but he it was to do with his objectives for the year, and I could just comment by email. So that is my update, Gus. I mean, I am working with the union, but as I said, I don't trust it. I had one of the reasons I had escalated is because one of the things the group director had said to me was that he could temporarily move me out of the team. He hasn't come back on that matter as yet, but I will be following up next week. I'll meet my line, Gus.
Wow. Wowee. That is a new one. I think the importance of asking questions to ascertain why things are being done, for me, central theme there, to finally get through as to why your manager is present. Oh, we, wanted a witness for the meeting, and then, then I should be able to have a witness as well, and so we'll postpone the meeting until I can have a witness as well. I thought that was great. And just ascertaining why things are being done, and particularly if there are any sort of accusations. I think that's another one to take very serious. Anytime there are allegations or accusations that you've done something wrong, I guess in this situation, if they're saying that this white guy is doing your work, that could be a perception that you're doing something wrong. I could see how that, easily could end up being, you're some sort of slacker, shiftless, no good black person. And, we got to pull your weight around here because you're not even doing your job. I could easily see how that sort of thing can be construed that way, particularly when it's time for a raise or promotion, that sort of thing. That, Bob's been doing most of your work this year. You're not even carrying your own weight. So absolutely, I think all of that is serious and should be dealt with in a serious manner, and particularly with the escalation. There's something that we talked about. I think we talked about that with the situation in Tennessee. We've talked about that with a number of other incidents, that if you do not address these issues, most of the time they will escalate. We were talking with this aggressive race soldier who's been doing the, I don't even know what you want to call it, just violence in the hallway, walking really close to you or bumping into you purposely and laughing about it in the hallway, and then having other other race soldiers on the job now doing the same thing and walking deliberately, walking very close to you in the hallways to make you uncomfortable, that these sort of things should be taken very seriously in the workplace. Be mindful and have a code about how you're going to be dealing with these sort of situations. Anything that's involving violence, anything where it's destruction of property, violence, or threats to these sort of things, destruction of property or violence, very, very seriously, in my view. Once it's gotten there, like, this has escalated way beyond just the typical types of racist antics that we talk about and prepare for on the job. Once it gets to that level, in my opinion, we have approximately 30, excuse me, we have approximately 30 minutes left in the broadcast, I guess a little less. If we have folks who have not been able to share at all, you should certainly get your hand up. I know there was a caller who had dialed in simultaneously when Stacy from the UK was giving her commentary. If you had commentary, suggestion that you wanted to get in, feel free. Other folks that dialed in who have a hand up, if you have other comments, suggestions, if you have your own personal situation that you want to discuss, feel free. Make sure you do not wait till the last minute.
Can I have you heard?
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm sorry?
Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, perfect. I wanted to report on a workplace racism story. I guess it's two workplace racism stories that seem to have a common link. I believe one of them took place in the Bronx recently. Have we discussed at all the workplace violence that occurred in a medical facility in the Bronx? I believe it was last week.
I don't believe so.
You know what? It turns out that episode of workplace violence, there was a shooting that resulted in the death of one physician and the grave injuring of, I believe, six other people. And the gunman was actually a Jamaican immigrant, a victim of racism, white supremacy, who had been pursuing a career as a medical professional, as a doctor. This victim had some sort of a provisional license to practice medicine in this one hospital. I'm guessing because I think the justification for giving him this provisional, license was because he attained his medical degree in the Caribbean. So because of that, he was under some sort of a special stipulation saying that he had to complete some sort of a probationary period at this hospital before he could get his full license. And it turned out that throughout his employment there, he was being targeted with reports of being aggressive. I believe the first reason why he wasn't promoted or allowed to advance or he was being reprimanded was that he kept to himself too much. And then finally, I believe he was terminated after charges or allegations of sexual harassment were levied against him. And then I just wanted to say that that was the part of the story that really stuck out to me, is that this sexual harassment allegation. You know, oftentimes I'm sure that the other victims in here are well aware that oftentimes these allegations of sexual harassment by victims to non-victims of racism are oftentimes unfounded and quite frankly just made up. And I would suggest to victims of racism, while you're on the job, minimize your contact with people of the opposite sex and being alone with them, because I think a lot of these situations arise from being alone with suspected racist females, or even victims themselves can be used against other victims in this manner. There's another case of alleged sexual harassment leading to the termination of a victim of racism. And that is of a commentator that is on Fox News. His name escapes me. I believe his name is Errol, E-R-R-O-L, if I recall correctly. He's a larger kind of heavy set commentator that primarily works on Fox Business. So if you're at all at your work, if you have you know, Fox Business idling, you'll oftentimes see this victim of racism. He's very recognizable. He has gray hair. And he was recently suspended and taken off the air due to allegations of sexual harassment. The allegations stem from he had a relationship with, to which he admitted he had a relationship with a commentator from CNN that worked for Fox News at one point. And he was, I guess it was brought up that this was sexual harassment because apparently when he ended the relationship with this woman, this female commentator, she was given the, it's a very similar report to what other women from Fox News are reporting. Her on-air time was cut and she was removed from different assignments.
And this was in response to, I guess, ceasing the relationship with this victim. And, you know, this situation, again, illustrates to me why it's imperative to avoid all contact with people of the opposite sex in close quarters and when there's nobody monitoring. As we've seen in other television situations, even when there are monitors, if you are alone with and if there are people even filming, you can have charges of sexual impropriety levied against you by these racists or suspected racists. So, you know, those are just two stories that kind of illustrate how these racists are using the charge of sexual harassment to eliminate us from different positions, prevent us from advancing in our careers, and basically making trouble for us at work and also making legal trouble for us as well. So, you know, I just want to advise fellow victims, you know, do not slack off on this point. You know, do not get comfortable. Do not think that, hey, I'm going to be an exception, or, hey, Karen, she's cool, or, hey, Cindy, you know, she likes me. You know, we got drinks one time. We're all right. No, those situations can quickly turn from, you know, relationship situations into situations where you're fighting for your income and your name is being bandied about as some sort of violent or sexually threatening individual. And I will mute my line. Thank you so much.
Appreciate that, Mr. Steele. Absolutely. I have seen where that can cause a variety of problems. Just the kicking it, hanging out, there doesn't have to be anything sexual going on. Doesn't even, you know, have to be anything even headed in that direction. It can be, you know, absolutely business what's taking place. But if it's a male-female thing, I mean, just the gossip, I don't know about y'all, but I've been in a lot of work situations where the gossip alone can be out of control, especially if it's any sort of, if it's a black male and it's a white female, same black female, white male, and it doesn't even have to be a racial aspect. I've just been in some work situations where the gossip aspect alone is enough to make you say, I think I'm just going to avoid all of this so that I am not the water cooler conversation for the next month or more on the job. Great recommendation. And I know some of the folks who've participated in our workplace racism conversations over the years, they've said they, you know, have a ironclad workplace code about never being alone with a white woman for any reason, not in an office, stairwell, nothing, to make sure that that does not happen, so that, you know, there are no allegations or anything like that. Other folks who dialed in, comments, questions, suggestions, last few minutes that we have, anything else folks wanted to make sure they touched on? Any final commentary? Folks want to make sure they get in. Final suggestions? Anything else stood out?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's the voice again. I wanted to give you guys an update on the raise situation that has been going on for quite a while now with my people's at their job. And so, as you guys know before, people that might not know, there's a white female and a white homosexual male director who has had a bit of words for each other. Well, I wouldn't say an exchange of words, but she actually said some things to the male director, and at an office party when she was intoxicated. In return, they sat down inside their office, the director's office, and he ended up giving this lady a raise after she should really be fired. But it just goes for the codification of how whites basically help each other even when they are being in a situation where they should be fired. But so this lady is now getting $20 an hour. She comes back, she brags about it to my peoples, and her quarters, which is one of her friends, is she's real close with. Another one, you know, she's close with, but not as close as her black friend that's at work. Then there's another one that is a supervisor. She's a black supervisor as well. So, you know, they're pretty much close with each other. So they found out the situation and they heard about the lady coming and bragging to all of them about how she's making $20 an hour and she, you know, just throwing it in their face, just like how whites do, very terroristic manner. So I advise my people to, you know, if you're going to go and address it, at least do it by yourself. So that way, you know, you can pretty much tackle it and be more on a leverage level for yourself, opposed to everybody to be in a group level at one time, and then they have to sort things out. So she did that, end up getting the raise, but it was nowhere near what that lady got. So they were all pretty much upset. Now, what happened is that everybody benefited from it. By her going, all of them benefited from it. It was like four or five of them that benefited from that raise. Now, mind you, this is another thing that, you know, people have to understand. And I think, I believe I heard a statement from Neely Fuller when he said that you have to go and do things on your own, because sometimes in the workplace, people will chant behind you and say, yeah, you gotta go in there, man, let's fight, let's do all this. And then when it's time to fight, everybody's hiding behind their desk while you're going into the battle zone. And that's exactly what happens. Now everybody runs to the director like, yes, thank you, I appreciate the raise. It's so gracious. So now the director, this is the update now, the director is mad. He was kind of frustrated with my peoples and her friend, her good friend at work. So he called both of them in, two blacks in his office. Now, mind you, this is the white homosexual director. So he goes and they close the door and he says to them, well, everybody in here is very happy, but you two. So he just flips the script on them. She says, like, and mind you, they were all cool at one point, but it seemed like this raise situation, now it's like they're on opposite sides of the fence, like it's them versus him now. That's the type of predicament and situation he has put them in. It's like everybody's agreeing and loves the raise, but you two guys are still mad about the situation. So he says, I'm disappointed in you. So, you know, long story short, they talk and then, you know, they excuse out of the office. So my people was like, all right, listen. She told him, listen, if you're not gonna give us the same as you gave this lady, at least make sure that you don't take away, because they took away the bonuses. So at least add the bonus back in. So every month, at least, you know, in one of the checks that they get monthly, they can get that money back up. So it's equivalent or close, more close to what they're getting now. So he says, okay, I'll think about it. So in the process now, her friend is still mad. Still, she's like, you know, this is not fair. This is not right. Rightfully so, it isn't. You know, somebody that you have more years in the company than another person, and then they are disrespectful to the manager and end up getting rewarded for it, it would make any black person very hostile. So my people is telling her to, you know, just relax, just chill out. Let's just be strategic about it. Let's see what he does. Let's see what's get done. She's like, man, okay. So every time he has an encounter with her friend, the director and her friend, he feels like she still has some bad tension. So now she ends up telling, I mean, he ends up telling the, he calls the black manager in the office and tells the black manager that, listen, you better talk to her, which is my people's friend, because my patient is wearing real thin with her. So he's basically saying either she gets act together, lose the attitude, or he's going to end up getting rid of her and have no regret to doing it. Now, mind you, they had such a close connection, all of them. They used to go out and drink, go out and get drinks. And I told her about all that, you know, about the whole drinking and being on you know, work time related. He gets them drunk on work-ish. I'm like, listen, you have to part your way away from that because you guys are getting too close to this person. And just like whites, they always show you their true colors when it comes down to a situation. Everything is all real good, and then all of a sudden, they just snap and change. The whole complex is just changed. And that's exactly what's happening. So this is what's going on right now. Now, my people had, at a time, the company was looking for help. So she ends up telling her cousin to apply. Real good guy. I've met him before. Real good guy. Quiet, does his work. Like, straight on point. Doesn't play around. Does his work. And the thing about it with this white homosexual director, there is, in the process of them getting raises now, he also opened up new positions. So anybody could apply for the position. So her cousin, he, you know, he wants to apply for the position. He's like, okay, you know, the black director is like, hey, I think that you should apply for the position because I've put you on many, many special projects and you have done it above and beyond what you're supposed to do. And so he was like, okay, cool. You know, he's a real quiet guy. He just comes to work. He's so codified. Like, everybody eats in the break room. He doesn't eat in the break room. He doesn't socialize with nobody. My people's telling me that everybody's on the internet when they're at work. He's the only one that is not on the internet. So he's really that model type to be in that position. Now, the white homosexual director tells the black manager that, oh, you know, I don't feel like he's ready for the position. So she's like, what do you mean? He's not ready for the position. I'm his manager. I've seen him do work that a lot of the other people can't handle. And he's done it and done it on time. So I think he's more than qualified for the position. And he's like, well, I don't know. I'll think about it. Well, what happened is my people were telling me that, you know, he is not friendly with the managers like that. He's not friendly with anybody. He just comes there to do work. But the manager likes people around him that is very friendly, flirtatious, you know, with a chitty-chatty. And because he's not like that, that's why he doesn't want to put him up in that position. And, you know, I just felt like it was just real, real nasty and terroristic and just tacky, real tacky. This guy is just real tacky. And that's all I wanted to give you guys. But I'll give you another update because I'm pretty sure every week I'm always hearing something. So that's all I wanted to tell you guys.
Context of white supremacy. That is long running, all the way back to the days of the plantation, where it would be demanded that the black person be happy. Yes, you have been lashed and raped and beaten and worked to death. And we've done that to your mother and grandmother, too.
But don't you be upset about it. Smile. Pick that cotton and smile. That is the system of racism. White supremacy, we'll have to see how all of that unfolds moving forward. I did want to get in as well. I had forgot where one of the callers had mentioned earlier that they had developed a source at work in terms of just paying attention to what was happening, like our caller who just shared down in Florida. This didn't happen to him per se, but just observing things that are happening in the office. You can pick up a lot. You can learn a lot. Well, that was advised before. That is extremely important to just be mindful, be alert, take notes, pay attention to things that are happening on the job. And if you can develop a source, meaning a person that you can talk to get constructive information, like they're not going to lie to you and just talk a whole bunch of nonsense and gossip and who's having an affair with who this week, but useful, helpful information so that you can be more informed about your job, you can function more efficiently and be more knowledgeable about your environment, your company. Great. If you can cultivate those sort of sources, they can be invaluable in terms of helping you on the job. Last few minutes, any final comments before we conclude things? We'll be here tomorrow for the book club, Gil Scott Heron, The Last Holiday audio set, or the book club session number 5 on that book as we are closing in on the conclusion. And the legendary Crystal Tyler, author of The Wheat Money, Cowbell would be ringing. She's married to a black male crack addict. She said she wanted his genetics. She'll be back with us this coming Monday. Any final comments, last couple of minutes before we conclude?
Hi, Goss.
Stacy in the UK, almost 4 a.m. Friday morning.
A quick couple of comments. I know you did mention, and I think you emailed me about someone in the UK who wanted to get in contact about establishing a network. I haven't had time, and mostly because of sort of stuff that I'm dealing with sometimes, it just means I don't respond to things as quickly as I'd want to. But just to mention, I will get back in touch. I did mention a couple of weeks ago that in relation to networks, that they're looking at establishing a BME, Black and Minority Ethnic Network, in the organisation that I work for. And there was a meeting about it last week. I won't go into too much detail about that now, but I will pick it up on a future call. But one of the issues was around how the shenanigans around just putting non-white members of staff forward for that meeting, because it was being held with a group director. And HR had identified, in inverted commas, a couple of people who they thought would contribute well. And needless to say, they will be some of the most confused non-white people in the organisation. So there was one girl who attended. She didn't actually say anything. Now, it turns out she had been asked to feed back to HR. And apparently she said she wasn't going to do that. Anyway, after the meeting, I saw her and I asked her how she felt it went. And she said, she responded, she thought it was really useful. She learned a lot. And I might have noticed that she didn't say a lot in the meeting. She went along primarily to learn about the racism in the organisation, and that she had... if she's really honest with herself, she had observed things, but she decided to not acknowledge that they were happening, because if she did so, she would have to accept and address the things that she had been trying to ignore. And I guess I was surprised on a number of fronts. I guess there's a level of honesty in there which... I wasn't expecting, but at the same time, it kind of made me think, well, where are you? Because you didn't actually say anything in the meeting anyway. I don't know how to take that. Maybe she's just coming into herself, but I thought it was really eye-opening in terms of just the way in which people deliberately maneuver around this racism thing. But as is always said, we are victims. Now, That individual is from the African continent. I mean, I think she was born in the UK, but her parents, so she's deeply melanated. And I had been talking to somebody else who was going to the network about who had been put forward to them, the BME network meeting discussion. And one of the things we observed about her and the shenanigans is around her is that she hangs around with a lot of racist suspects in the organisation, and they are younger people as well. So, you know, they're probably sort of in their early 20s, sort of 19 to early 20s. And they are some of the most Aryan-looking young people you could ever select. I'm not saying they're necessarily all joined racist organisations, but if you looked at them, they would be, you know, if you wanted to describe Hitler's Aryan youth, that's what they look like, you know, very, very blonde individuals. So it's just an interesting, when you see it, it's an interesting thing to look at her, because she would be one of very few non-white people in that group. So when I was speaking to her, some of these young people had walked past and she called them to have a conversation with them and then went back into, you know, didn't. She had a conversation with them and then she walked away. Now, I carried on with them into the lift and they had seen me talking to her and decided to start pretty much denigrating her. Why did she call us? She gets on my nerves. She always does that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was just that, wow, they saw me talking to her. They clearly have no regard for her, and they didn't even have enough respect for her to not discuss her in that way in front of me. I haven't actually said anything to her because I'm not even sure she would get it. And I'm in two minds. I'm struggling. I would welcome people's views about whether or not I should even say anything to this young person, but I'm erring on the side of she's not ready to hear that level of honesty. I'll mute my line, guys.
Wow. With the the victim that approached you after you had your meeting, I always think it's great. I think racism, white supremacy, it's such a violent system, and it's happening all the time, every day, worldwide, in all areas of people activity. I think a lot of us just are overwhelmed by it, particularly when we don't really understand it. We don't have, you know, terms to accurately describe what's happening to us. So for the victim who approached you and said, you know, this has just been helping me get a better understanding of things I've been trying to ignore, I think that's how a lot of us function in this system. So that's great if you were able to help present information to get her to a point where she's ready to. I think Dr. Welsing, she used to always say the job of the psychiatrist is to help the patient see truth and accept truth, even when they are reluctant and or fearful to do so. So that's great if you were able to help her just take an honest assessment of her work environment and what is happening there, particularly what the race soldiers are doing to her. That's phenomenal. In terms of sharing what happened with another victim, that is a tough one. I know we have a lot of victims who pretty much their code is they pretty much take the position when they're on the job that they are behind enemy lines and that they do not look at other non-white people as, you know, allies, or I have, you know, some obligation to share information with this person or what have you. I'm not going to say anything because this person, as you shared just now, there was someone who attended your meeting and they had been asked to, I guess, be a spy to report back and, you know, let us know what they're talking about in there. They take the position that there has been a lot of that. And, you know, I could go share this information and, you know, they could go back and tell the white people and get me fired or something of that nature. That is certainly logical. Other people say, hey, I'm going to share. I think it's black self-respect to share and to try to help other black people. So I'm going to share the information and just try to figure out the way that I can share what happened without causing problems for myself. That is a difficult one. And right at the end of the program, you'll have to tell us how you came to a decision, if you decided to share or to just keep it to yourself. Folks, if you want to write in and let us know your code on that one, we'll pick it up there for next week.
Thanks, everyone, for listening in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Again, we'll be here tomorrow evening. Gil Scott-Heron, The Last Holiday, audio segment number 5. With that, thanks so much for tuning in. I know the 4th, thankfully, is over. We survived. But I would still encourage sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. The race soldiers are still going to be out looking to stop folks if you're out and about. And it's just been my experience that a lot of people, we do not function at our best once we are under the influence. We do not make the best decisions. And it's just been, the evidence shows that racists, they have done a lot of damage, taking advantage and abusing black people who were not thinking correctly, weren't making great decisions. Alcohol or whatever other substances played a role in that. Lots of evidence that that is true. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.